In this podcast, we look at what a real human gene looks like. Most people know that a human gene is a segment of DNA between two points in the long molecule of DNA. They might even know that that DNA is unstuck, divided up, separated a little bit, and an imprint is taken of it in RNA, which is basically the imprint material, the transfer material, and this is taken outside the nucleus of the cell and manipulated in such a way that that piece of DNA gets translated into a useful protein. Useful protein gets folded up into a little nanorobot, which operates, does its amazing stuff here. They're promoting cellular reactions, chemical reactions, or actually physically walking about the cell. An amazing thing to see. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I describe things scientific. Now, the conventional wisdom is that if you have a diagram in a book of a chromosome at the point of just above the point of splitting, so it's that X shaped like two big woolly socks tied together, the X chromosome, and you show that the DNA strand comes off the one end, and then you just colour in a little segment of it, and you say, look, that segment is DNA. And people ask me, is this good enough? And I'll say, well, it may be good, but it's incorrect. Are you concerned about it? And they'll inevitably say, look, we're not concerned. We're here to just move things along. And so I can't fault them, but they haven't provided me any information that teaching, I suppose, propagating incorrect ideas or inadequate ideas are beneficial or harmful. It's just their preference. So given that it's their preference, you may well be in a situation that if your gene, you imagine it coming from a chromosome, all wound up chromosome, and that the gene is just simply a segment between two points on that DNA. Well, I wouldn't be doing this podcast if that wasn't the actual case. It's not the actual case for a number of reasons. When the DNA is actually producing genes, it's all uncoiled. So that sock thing, that double sock, is wound together at the point that the DNA replicates, and then there's all these little spools which come along and take a double coil of DNA around it and create coil upon coil. That's what you see as a super coil. So the simple idea of pulling the DNA chromosome is possibly a little bit misleading. You'll have to look at it in the animations, and you'll see, I've forgotten what the name of the protein is. It's just on the tip of my tongue. It's a little yo-yo-shaped protein, and the DNA spins around it one clockwise, twice, and then around the other reverse spins around the other way, one anti-clockwise, such that little coils can sort of super coil together, and then coil and coil and eventually form your chromosome. One of the things that people, I suppose, have a mistake is the thought that a chromosome naturally becomes coloured. To actually make a chromosome, and chromosome means coloured, so it means a molecular, a life molecule. A ribosome, zone means something to do with life. It's striped because the DNA can take up particular dyes, so the actual stripes themselves do not indicate a gene. That's a common misconception. Then, nonetheless, we have a length of DNA between two points, and is that a gene? Well, the answer is yes, it is a gene, but not for eukaryotic cells. So eukaryotic cells, or life, are cells with a nucleus inside them, so they have their nuclear DNA. So if it's coming from a chromosome, which is all coiled up like that, that's in a nucleus, and therefore the segment is not like that. So let's step back a moment. There's two sort of, I suppose, they're not called domains. There's two categories of cells. There's eukaryotic, which have got nucleuses, and prokaryotic. These are cells which are bags with just DNA just floating around the place. Everything's floating. There's no nucleus. The DNA is free. But we don't actually classify things. We don't. We definitely say if it's got a cell, it's eukaryotic. But we tend to not. It's the prokaryotic, or nucleus-free cells to describe cells, because basically within the prokaryotic, you've got the archaea, which are the extremophile cells, very ancient cells. Now, they're very ancient because the ancient Earth everywhere was extreme, so the only life could exist. If it came to exist, it existed in extreme environments. And so after billions of years, a newcomer came along, which is called the bacteria. These are small cells with a hard outer case, very small. They also don't have a nucleus, but they have the property of producing oxygen. And the oxygen is poisonous to the archaic cells. And so as part of transforming, terraforming the Earth, the archaea cells were basically history, and they are history now. They're in little hot vents or very acidic ponds or inside cow stomachs or inside your stomach, decomposing food, creating the methane. One of the things they like to produce is not so much carbon dioxide or oxygen. They produce methane, so your explosive fart, or a cow's explosive fart, is due to these ancient cells. But they had one trick up their sleeves, is that they enslave bacteria inside themselves and transfer themselves into that final family, the eukaryotic cells, which evolved to be us eventually. So we've got these two groups of cells. Now, the important thing is why I talk about prokaryotic cells is indeed little segments of cells of their DNA include not one but two or three proteins in a little snippet. So there's some DNA that'll be a start point, and a piece of densely packed DNA material, and that is fed directly to a RNA cruncher reader, which produces a protein which is required by the prokaryotic cell. So that's an important point to say, that as drawn, the genes drawn on the DNA of our eukaryotic cells, us, is the actual way genes appear. Or almost the way they appear in the prokaryotic cells. So that's something to get your mind around. So if I have an objection, why isn't it that a gene is just simply a little sequence? Say if there's, it's a, now I'd say if you've got a DNA and it's numbered from 1 to 1,000, why isn't it DNA just simply code between, say, 400 and 600? Why is it not just a continuous sequence, pretty much like me reading a sentence? Is why is it not like just a strip of writing, as a like a piece of punch tape which sends out code? Why is it not like that? Well, this is a bit of a mystery. It's not like that. There's a whole great piece of complexity, and so I have to describe this in little pieces as we come across. Before we come up to the gene, so each, like in prokaryotic cells, it's all in a continuous strip, and such a continuous strip it can actually code for several proteins at once. This little strip will go through and you'll get two types of protein beams clipped off. Eukaryotic cell, it's a bit more different, and so I'm going to say it as we come. There's the first little bit is the gene expression parts of the DNA. So there's parts of the DNA which says how often this DNA is wanted, this gene is going to be produced, and what factors must be around the environment before this little piece of gene is actually fired off. So it's sort of like a little bit of computer code in your DNA, which negotiates when that gene will be off to produce a protein. So basically, these complicated molecules go around the place, and when it's activated, it says, look, I'll produce this this gene. So there's actually a bit of actual computation, computer code at the start of your DNA for your gene. So that's an interesting thing, in that upstream of where it's been produced is some computer logic which says how often a protein is produced just as well. Because a cell is a complicated thing and it needs different amount of protein based on messages it receives from the outside world, decisions that it makes, stresses that it's under, will produce different amount of proteins. Decisions get computed, form of computer code, which is at the front of your DNA, so that expressor. And then you go a bit further on and it says, start producing. And it's all okay, but then we have something, part of the gene is broken up into exons and introns. So it goes exon, intron for a bit while, exon for a bit more, intron for a bit, exon for a bit more, and then it finally goes to the stop section of your DNA. So what will come along is the RNA will be taken off the print of this, and we'll have a print of this, and there will be this RNA is going to be floated outside the nucleus to be made into a protein, but not so fast. There's a front section which is added onto it to say this is the front of my DNA, and then it will go through the exon and then find the introns and cut off the introns and throw them away. It's a pretty amazing piece. So it will actually, in the RNA, detect the intron parts and actually throw it away. So if you imagine a piece of a line of a sentence cut out in a line, you have sections where it's just garbage or not coded, but it's coded in such a way that the mothering of it will remove it away. So if you can imagine a gene as basically a sentence, there's a little bit before the sentence where it says use this sentence in this circumstance, then there's a capital letter to tell you it's the start, then there's some words, and then there's a distinct break where there's some rubbish for a while, introns, then it stops again to continue the sentence, some rubbish again, and then it's a sentence, and then there's a full stop to say I've finished now. The RNA is taken off and it's actually mothered such that the introns, the rubbish, is removed from the sent out of the cell. Seems rather complicated, so there's some plus points. I can understand the computer code. You have the thing of exons and introns, and what they sometimes do is they, in some diagrams, more modern diagrams, when they show the DNA streaming out, uncoiling from the chromosome, they show a little sequence and they have a little brackets, and at the start they say exon, and then they say intron, and then exon. Now, of course, in a single gene, there's actually an exon, an intron, exon, intron. There can be actually several. I don't know how many, what the record is, but your gene is quite a complicated thing. So if you didn't have RNA to manufacture it, you wouldn't know what was going on. So this describes what's going on. It's actually it's a complex picture that goes out. And, of course, DNA doesn't unravel from one end. All the actual little spools walk away, and the entire DNA, after it's pulled apart, so that little exon is a mirror image of each, the left is a mirror image of the right, it's ripped apart, and then you're left one sock in each cell. That one sock then just instantly coils into, it just uncoiled from one end, it just instantly goes into a, I suppose not a tangled mess. It's important to understand that it doesn't tangle, simply because the strands repel each other. They're attracted on the inside by hydrogen bonds, but the actual DNA strands repel each other, and so there's the end of it. Say if the end of your string was going to move into a different section, so your DNA is these strings, but these strings are broken up into 20 sections, but those 23 sections form, I should say, 46 sections in your cell, because they're all, these sections are quite distinct regions and domains within the nucleus, and the DNA doesn't, it's not like a string in your drawer, it's actually this, the DNA strands are repelled from each other, so they actually fill the volume, and actually culture creates a pressure. DNA creates a pressure on the outside of your nuclear structure. The nucleus spill out and occupy a much larger volume than the actual nucleus. So the nucleus actually holds that DNA in with a bit of that pressure, means that the DNA starts to get tangled, gets actually pushed out of those individual regions. So in the human DNA, there's this complex thing with a piece of computer code, a start, exon, inon, exon, inon, exon, and then it's taken out, it gets a lead section of RNA attached, or could be in it, it's attached, and the inons are removed. It's sort of, it's like an editor comes over and shapes it up, you know, you're ready to go. It actually corrects the spelling mistakes, corrects the rubbish. It's like your mum checking through your assignment before you hand it in, they say, oh, what's this, oh, a keyboard got stuck and I pressed X for a couple of whiles. Remove it. So some of it we can understand why there's the introns in the first place. That's, I think, just part of the deal of a real life form. I sort of have a that evolution. This is on important places and just patches up the rest. And if they can patch up the rest and get to the next stage, to the next generation, that's the important thing. So that's just my own theory. So this is, I suppose, you can judge for yourself. It's hard to say. So when I see the diagram, or understand how it actually does work, and then when I see the diagram, so I often don't see the simple diagram first. I see that later, and I say, well, what are they trying to say? Why is it coming from here? So I'm a bit cursed, whereas if you just only see the simple textbook diagram, you can easily say, well, it's the way it is. It's in a textbook, and we teach from textbooks. Quid et quo, I don't know, I wish you could say, quod et demonstrandum, it's the way it goes. So we're off in two different universes, and I hope that at this point in time, this make you, or some people who really, I suppose, understand it already, can actually see some of the complexity. Perhaps it's not worth teaching students, but it's definitely worth knowing the truth rather than, I suppose, being swept along with turning up, just taking the textbook and then giving heaps of advice. It seems a strange sort of world from my perspective. That's all for tonight on this one. On thinking, doing, and teaching science.